And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
Hello and welcome back to the RBLR Rays Show. I hope you are doing well and thank you for joining us as we wrap up this 2024 baseball season for the Tampa Bay Rays. It's an unfamiliar feeling here on the RBLR Rays podcast. This is the first time that we are coming to you in early October without any baseball to talk about. The Rays have finished their 2024 season at an 80-82 record, just a smidge under 500. And we're going to wrap up the season. We're going to call this a season finale. And unfortunately, it's just me, Pat Davenport, here today. Zach can't be here, but that's okay. I feel like it's truly fitting for this Rays season for us to have just under 500 in just under 50% of the hosting power, I would say. I would say Zach is maybe the greater half. He's definitely the more experienced half of this podcasting duo. So we've got 49.2% of the hosting power, which fits exactly this Rays season. But before I get into what went well, what went wrong, can we look forward to 2025? What can we break down in this very strange 2024 season? I want to say a couple of things. First of all, thank you for tuning in this season. It's been a very tough season. The first time the Rays haven't made the playoffs since 2018. It's the first time we are a losing team, a team that has lost more than we've won since 2016. And it's been a pretty frustrating year from a fan's perspective. But yet, any of you that tuned into one, several, or all the episodes from this 2024 season are greatly appreciated. And I just want to say thank you from the RBLR team for sticking with us and listening to what we have to say and talking Rays with all of us. Because I think one thing that the Rays community is very blessed to have is a very tight-knit community where everyone can kind of get to know each other pretty easily. And we have the smartest fans in baseball, do the Tampa Bay Rays. And we just appreciate having smart discussions about baseball with you. And if there's one way you could give back to us, if you want to say thank you to us for the content we've been creating, a great way to show some appreciation that's free and completely effortless is to drop a like on wherever you're watching this. It does us a big favor. It really shows us that you like what you're listening to, and it helps us grow our brand. So we really appreciate it if you could drop us a like. And if you want to tune into more episodes, for example, when we go live or what's going to happen in this off season, we've got plenty of fun stuff planned for the off season. Be sure to drop us a follow and subscribe on social medias and on YouTube, because that is when you're going to get the first notifications of when any new episode drops, and you can follow along live. And today is not an episode where we're going to be doing this, but in future we're going to be having live comments as well. So if you are watching a live episode and you're watching on YouTube, you can drop us a comment with a question, a comment, or anything like that, and we can respond to it and have a live discussion here on the podcast, which I think is really cool. So if you want to get in on that, the best way to know when we're going live is to follow us on the socials and to subscribe on YouTube. Okay, without any further ado, let's talk about this 2024 Rays season. Let's try on a kind of macro level to break down what went right and what went wrong about this 2024 Rays season. I mean, we could talk about it in a number of different ways. I think the kind of narrative of the season is that there were moments where the Rays looked like they could be starting to put something together, but they could never quite get out of first gear. For every sweep, they would get swept. For every series win, they would have a series loss. Every time they take the first two games of a series and could sweep, more often than not, they drop that series finale. And then, you know, instead of going on a 8-2 run, they'd often go 6-4 through dropping those like games at the end of series or at the start of a series. They just could never seem to put a consistent run of winning together. And then with a couple of big unfortunate sweeps in September, ended up falling slightly below the 500 mark. Those series against the Phillies and Tigers at the end were really the nail in the coffin for any kind of playoffs hopes. Funnily enough, though, the Rays ended up staying in it all year. They ended up finishing six games out of the playoffs. But with a week to go, there was still a chance in that Detroit series where if they could pick up a sweep, they would go into that final series of the season with something to play for. That didn't happen this time, but The Rays, despite finishing under 500, despite having their worst season in 8 years, were still in the playoff hunt until the last week of the season, which, if that's the worst case scenario for a Rays team, you've got to feel pretty good about that. But if we were going to talk about the kind of several parts that made up this season, we all know what I'm going to say. It was a tale of two sides of the baseball, the pitching and defense side, and then, of course, the hitting side. I'm going to start with the negative, get the negative stuff out of the way here early, and talk about where things kind of went wrong from a offensive side, position player side of things. And then we'll talk about the more positive stuff and end on the positive message. And that's the pitching side of things. And I'll talk more about that later. Okay, so headline is... This Rays offense was absolutely abysmal this year. They were really, really bad and a really frustrating watch for fans. And even if you were looking at data, there wasn't many positives to point to in terms of underperformance, in terms of like unlucky line drives, etc., etc. It was a bad season. They ended up finishing the year as a whole with a 95 WRC plus, which means they were 5% below league average hitting wise. But that does put them 23rd out of 30 teams in all of baseball. So they're in the bottom 10 in terms of offense, in terms of overall production. But you could argue that could have been because of a lot of different things. Why was the offense so bad? They made some significant moves over the offseason to kind of change up the offense. They let go of Luke Raley. They made some other kind of around the borders moves in terms of their backup catching position. They added some kind of bench bats with Johnny DeLuca in replacement of Manuel Margot. And they had to rely on a full season of Taylor Walls and Jose Caballero sharing the shortstop duties due to the ongoing legal situations with Wander Franco. Is that enough to turn a team that was, in pretty much every metric, the second best offense in the American League last year, the seventh from worst in all of baseball, and the third worst in the American League? On paper, no, but those changes, plus a couple of other factors, resulted in some really troubling results. The first thing was that guys that they were relying on as the core from last year were either injured or drastically underperforming to start the year. Randy Arozarena had the worst start of his career. Yandy Diaz had the worst stretch of his career. And Josh Lowe was injured. And then when he returned from injury, took a long time to get up to speed. So three of the most important bats, three of those 20 home run power threats that you had in the lineup was completely non-existent. A third of the lineup, bam, gone, dead zones. Brandon Lau also had a struggle to stay on the field at the start of the year, and that, of course, led to some inconsistency in terms of his results. Jose Siri also had a way down year compared to his 2023 campaign, where he hit 30 home runs. He then, again, couldn't seem to see the baseball. He couldn't seem to make any sort of contact whatsoever, and went through kind of attitude problems as well, getting benched at times by Kevin Cash and finding himself in and out of the lineup. So if we remove 20 home runs from Arozarena, if we remove 20 home runs from Josh Lowe, if we remove 20 home runs from Jose Siri, then that's 60 home runs off the books that were not going to be replaced by the guys like Johnny DeLuca, Ahmed Rosario, and Jose Caballero, three players that were kind of having to take on more significant roles in the lineup, but their skill sets are completely the opposite from the former players that I mentioned. Really not power threats, very much bat to ball, contact, speed, fielding guys, as opposed to big power threats. And that led to essentially what was a powerless lineup. If you go by ISO, which is a stat that people use to kind of show extra base hit potential of a team, where you take a team's on-base percentage and you take their slugging percentage and minus their on-base percentage, then you are left with their ISO to kind of show the kind of extra base hit potential of a team. The Rays had a 136 ISO, which is really bad. It is 27th out of the 30 major league teams, ahead of only the Marlins, Nationals, and those, of course, White Sox at the bottom of the pile. meaning that they were not getting extra base hits very often. And if you look at the hits from Rosario, DeLuca, Palacios, Walls, Caballero, Rotvet, I've named at least five players that were getting regular at-bats for the Rays. They were all ground, seeing eye ground balls, infield singles, maybe little loopers falling in front of the outfielders. They were not line drives into the gap. They were not home runs. They just were not producing those kind of hits. And as you may know, an extra base hit is really valuable because if there's runners on base, even if they're on first base, an extra base hit has a significant chance to bring them home. And if there's no one on base, then you get into a position where the next guy could bring you home far more easily than if you're at first base. One home run is actually probably more valuable than four singles in any given game, okay? Because four singles in a row are really hard to get. One home run, you can get that. It's one at bat, one mistake, one good swing, and then that's instant offense. Meanwhile, four singles could get you one or two runs, but they're really hard to string together. So the Rays had to rely on that stringing singles together method for a really big chunk of the season, and that led to inconsistent results in terms of run production, and also led to some really bad runners in scoring position results. I think we all know that the Rays really struggled with runners in scoring position, and that's because of the what I just said. Sometimes they were relying on singles, but also their at-bats, the quality of at-bats for runners in scoring position were really off compared to previous years. They were striking out more than what they've used to with runners in scoring position. And they were getting unlucky as well with lots of pop-ups or balls that were getting caught by fielders. So when you mix in a lack of power and a lack of consistency with runners in scoring position, you're going to see a really, really bad offense. And that's a shame. I mean, if you look at any offense offensive stat that looks at power, the Rays are in the bottom 10. Slugging percentage, they're second from last. It's just a bad, bad look. And at the trade deadline, the Rays also decided to trade away Isaac Paredes and Randy Arozarena, two critical bats for them. Randy was just starting to get a little bit of his value back, starting to get back on track towards his career norms, and then he was out the picture. And then they were relying on a Johnny DeLuca, Richie Palacios left field platoon, which can field pretty well, and you can rely on them for some contact. Particularly Richie Palacios is good at getting on base, but neither of which are power threats. Neither of them are kind of even reliable for double-digit home runs in any given season. So that's a big step back on the power. And then Isaac Paredes hit 30 home runs last year, which you cannot replace with any player that you were going to get in a kind of selling window. Christopher Morel was the best attempt at that, and he could on a year hit 30 home runs. He has power, but unfortunately he was on a cold streak when he joined the Braves too. Similar to Jose Siri, just couldn't get enough bat on the ball to really leverage that power in any meaningful way. The Rays also had struggles at catcher this year as well, where they could never really settle on a camp combination that they were fully comfortable with on both sides of the ball. Of course, defense is the most important thing, and they really enjoyed Alex Jackson's defense until they didn't, as he was kind of brought in to replace Rene Pinto when a weird scenario happened where Rene Pinto was sent down despite seemingly doing okay. He was sent down to the minors for the remainder of the season, and Alex Jackson took his place. People were happy with his game calling. Taj Bradley credited it. All the coaching staff said they really liked his game calling and defense behind the plate. But with that, there was a massive sacrifice on the offense, as he has had one of the worst seasons in Rays history offensively, if you look at the amount of at-bats that he has had and was allowed to take. Which, of course, when you couple it with a guy like Taylor Walls and Jose Caballero, that are also really, really bad hitters, that leaves potentially a bottom third of your lineup that's a complete dead zone. And it's really hard to compete when you're relying on just six hitters. And when another two of those hitters like Morel and Siri are also struggling, it means that you're only relying on, I think the Rays were only ever relying on about three or four hitters at one time. Meanwhile, Ben Rothbart had better offensive results, but again, not a power threat, single slapper guy, and people had mixed opinions on his defense. Cannon of an arm, but his game calling, blocking was kind of hit and miss. So There was never really a happy medium. The Rays ended up settling at the end of the year with Logan Driscoll and Ben Rothvat. It'll be interesting to see if Rothvat sticks with the team. I think it's probably unlikely, but Logan Driscoll, early returns on him look decent enough, and I think he will be a solid part of the team going forward. Hopefully he can continue to develop to be at least okay on both sides of the ball. So essentially, Rays offense bad because no power. All their numbers were worse than last year, and that's because they were relying on worse players than what they used to. And that's part of what they're doing in terms of changing their window, I guess. They're refurbishing the window, which means that they've had to close it down temporarily while they're quickly retooling. But it's not a complete rebuild teardown. But it does mean that we're relying on inconsistent players, young players that are still working out how to be consistent at the major league level. Even players that we have lots of promise in, like Morel, like Caminero. They're guys that are going to be inconsistent and go through slumps. I wouldn't be surprised if Caminero goes through a big slump next year while major league pitchers adjust to him. And until you've had a couple of years in the league, it's really hard to kind of be consistent with not just your approach, but also delivering consistent results as well. So that's where we're at with the offense. It's still got a lot of variance in it. I don't think it's going to be as bad as it was last year. There's definitely spots where you could shore up the offense. But also, unfortunately, part of it is waiting for a wave of prospects to come up that look really good. Like Carson Williams, like Trey Morgan, Xavier Isaac, Chandler Simpson, and even Aiden Smith, who had a great year since coming to the Rays in the Randy Rosarena trade. These guys are all a year or two away, and you've got to wonder what the Rays' approach in the offseason will be. Will they get a plaster to kind of shore up the offense in the short term, or will they just ride it out with the current core of players that they have, inconsistent and lacking at the plate though they are, while they wait for guys that they hopefully are going to rely on to be consistent offensive contributors going forward? I think both sides of the argument are valid, but if you're trying to win games and get into the playoffs as soon as possible, maybe a one-year deal for a DH type or a corner outfield power threat type might not be the worst idea. But again, we'll see what the Rays do with that. In terms of defense, the Rays kind of had decent defense. They had they graded out by Fangraphs defensive metric, which isn't perfect and relies on a bunch of different things and is quite complicated to break down and discuss. But they graded out 13th in the major leagues, which is kind of major league average for fielding. But that doesn't consider things that Jose Siri and Taylor Walls do in terms of pre-pitch ball movement, where they get themselves in position by reading the pitch and reading the batter. And getting in good positions before their ball is hit, which isn't tracked by defensive metrics. So perhaps the Rays are undergraded defensively, but also I think they weren't the best defensive team in the league this year, but I would say they were good. I would say they were above average, and they've got lots of good fielding players in there. I think Caminero's underrated at third base. Walls, of course, underrated by defensive metrics. Caballero's a good fielder. I think Brandon Lau is a completely solid fielder. DeLuca, Siri, and Lowe is a really good outfield combination. Josh Lowe can sometimes be a bit inconsistent, but in terms of fielding, I think we're completely fine. That might change if we start to rely on Johnny Aranda a little bit more in the infield. If Chris Morel gets lots of time in the field, that could knock the team back down to kind of average fielding wise, but they're doing enough offensively where they're not hurting themselves, which is the main thing for me. And then, of course, there is the base running, which they were actually really good at this year. They stole a lot of bases. They were really good at taking the extra base. I want to throw it back to 2021, 2022, where the Rays were just running like crazy and were getting themselves into a lot of outs. I think 2022 was the year where that was particularly prevalent. And I totally believe that that was an experiment to kind of work out what the team and the players were capable of doing on the bases and how far they could push the limits so that in 2023 and 2024 they could be really effective and really efficient with knowing what they can and can't do. And that came into effect. The Rays were graded top 10 in Fangraphs base running, and they stole a lot of bases as well. I mean, Jose Caballero led the American League in stolen bases, which was very, very impressive from him in his debut season. Johnny DeLuca could steal a lot of bags. Josh Lowe could steal bags. There's loads of guys that could steal you 20 stolen bases on that team. very few dead runners apart from Metcacha and Yandy Diaz. The rest of the guys can run. They're an athletic team, which is really exciting to see. And the Rays do take advantage of that and get guys into scoring position through their running. It's not perfect, but I really like what the Rays do on the base pass. And I think that kind of profile of player will continue to be really present on the team as well. And again, all it takes is a little bit more contact ability, a little bit of a better approach at the plate that can get the ball in play a little bit more, being a bit more situational with your hitting, and also just some better performances from the players that are capable of them should lead to more opportunities with runners in scoring position and getting them home as well, because lots of singles hitters can get 2 seconds by stealing the base. So in summary on the offense, this is a long-winded way to say is they need to get more powerful. Currently, this set of players do not have enough power, and the bats that do have power are nowhere near consistent enough with their contact abilities to take advantage of it. So there's a lot of work to be done there. It's still really volatile. To conclude, the Rays probably do need some help in the short term, probably at a corner outfield spot, and maybe in the middle infield as well, just to add a bit of power and just add a bit of glue to this lineup, so that once you get to the 7, 8, 9 guys, you just have to give up on your inning for most of the time. So I would love the Rays to make a short-term move there. What that is, I don't know, because I do believe in Carson Williams. I do believe in Caminero turning good. Johnny Aranda looks like he might be a big contributor, but then the rest is an inconsistent mess. So why not get a steady player that you know you can contribute major league average or above offense, even at the expense of a little bit of running, maybe at the expense of a little bit of defense, to make that happen? Something you don't need to make a big expense for to improve your wardrobe is some RBLR Rays gear. The Rays may be out for the year, but you can still rep your team. I think you can do that if it's the Bucks as well. They're having a strange season as well. But the Bucks gear, there's also some Lightning gear. There's also Rowdy's gear. There's probably going to be some Sun gear as well. It's all there at shop.rblrsports.com. You can rep the Tampa Bay sports team of your choice, wear it with pride, and show how much of a great fan you are, and look pretty fresh and pretty fly while you're at it at shop.rblrsports.com. And a little secret from me to you, you can use the promo code Flappy to represent those Flappy Boy Rays for 10% off your order. So go to shop.rblrsports.com/, but use the promo code Flappy for 10% off your order. Okay, I'm done ragging on the offense and why it's so bad. I want to talk about the pitching. I think the pitching was really good this year. It graded out to be kind of top 10. They were ninth in team ERA this year, but they were really good in their command philosophy. They were top 5 lowest in terms of walks per 9. They delivered and delivered and delivered. They had some excellent performances from the likes of Zach Littell. We saw some really promising flashes, if some inconsistent health from the likes of Ryan Pepiot. Shane Barrs looks brilliant going down the stretch at the end of the year. Taj Bradley went up and down and showed some flashes of brilliance, but also some flashes of not being so good. And also, oh my goodness, the pen that we saw last year was unbelievable. I mean, trying to narrow it down to just 8 guys is going to be impossible. But when you think about Uceda, Fairbanks, Kelly, Rasmussen, all those guys, Hunter Biggie, the potential he has, all those guys are going to be absolutely electric. It's going to be impossible to lock it down to 8 guys. And that's a good thing, because we've got the best bullpen in baseball for my money. And that's going to roll over to next year. None of those guys are off the books next year, which is really, really exciting. And that was after we traded one of the best relievers in baseball in Jason Adam. So the Rays bullpen is incredible. No notes, don't need to touch it. Maybe shore up some AAA depth, maybe pick up some interesting kind of stuff guys that are having some command issues, go fix them down in AAA and in spring training, and then if someone gets hurt or we need to make a trade, bam, we've got another one. The Rays bullpen factory is something that I've never been concerned with. They can just churn out guys from people you've never heard of all the time. Usada is a great example of that.
And then in terms of the rotation, how it's shaping up, I mean, Zach Littell was the horse. He was the veteran. He was essentially the ace of this staff, especially after Zach Eflin got traded away. And he really stepped up, led the team in pitching war this year. And he was the only real starter that was always good and always healthy for the vast majority of the year. And his contribution can't be understated. Whether he stays on the team next year is up for debate. I think he should be, because what's happening right now is this team is still super, super young. Pepio, Bradley, Bars are three really promising young arms, but still are young, okay? And Jeff Springs is also there, and he's great when he's on, but he's still recovering from Tommy John surgery. He came back to the major league level, but of course he still had really harsh innings limits. It's going to be his first full season back next year. I think it would be foolish to bank on him going and pitching 170 innings next year. So you've got to have a guy like Zach Littell, who's a veteran presence, that's going to lead the guys from the front and by example, who's been around, he's struggled, he's been with different teams, he knows his way around the block. He is a guy that's going to be a stopper for this team, and I think he's a vital part. Especially when the only thing you can count on with a pitching rotation is that at least one or two of them are going to get hurt along the way. Planning for only five starters is not going to be good enough. Taj Bradley could maybe start the year down in the minor leagues if everyone's healthy to make room for that. And then, of course, Shane McClanahan's joining the rotation next year too. So this pitching core, bullpen and rotation shapes up to be electric next year, and it's going to be something that's really, really exciting. The Rays are always a team that's built on run prevention, and they're really, really good at that. Their defense is good enough, and then their pitching is unbelievable. They will not walk guys very often. They won't get themselves into trouble. They're starting to kind of return to form in terms of stuff guys that can get lots and lots of strikeouts. Pepio is a good example of that. Bradley can get lots of strikeouts. Bars can get a lot of strikeouts as well. McClanahan was a big strikeout guy as well. So they're moving away from the kind of like Tyler Alexander, Zach Eflin, like kind of command guys that are looking to get soft contact. Rasmussen was a guy like that as well. Littell's a little bit like that, but they're going back to stuff that'll blow you away with strikeouts again, which is really, really exciting. Because I think the biggest flaw, if there was one, with the Rays pitching staff this year, was they were giving up a lot of fly balls. They were way near the bottom in terms of ground ball percentage, in terms of the ground balls that they gave up. They were right near the bottom. Their team ground ball percentage was 39.4%, which is super low. It was second worst in the major leagues, in fact. Only the Reds had a lower one. And then if you look at the teams around them, like the White Sox also had a really low ground ball percentage. So did the A's. So, like, you can get away with that unless you're getting barreled. And sometimes the Rays would get barreled a little bit in terms of their home run to fly ball percentage. They had 11.6 home run per fly ball. So 10% of those fly balls were getting hit for home runs. And when you're giving up a lot of those, that can mean quite a lot of home runs. So that's the main thing that they need to be scared of. You don't have to be a ground ball pitcher, but ground balls do far less damage on average than fly balls. So maybe they'll have a look at that. But again, it's not the biggest concern, because this Rays pitching staff is super really good. I mean, we all knew this. This is a long roundabout way of saying the pitching staff doesn't really need to be touched. You've got guys like Mason Montgomery, who's going to fill a full-time role. You've got starting pitcher prospects as well, like Joe Rock sitting down in the minors for depth. You're going to have a hard time finding a space for them all. Maybe the kind of main objective for this Rays offseason is going to need to shore up the offense with some consistent bats and using that bullpen, that depth in rotation, to trade from a strength to improve a weakness. I think the Rays are going to be ready for a run at a 2025 playoff spot. Are they good enough to challenge for the division? I would say right now, as things stand, not really. But I think this team, on the whole, probably achieved a really low-end part of their kind of probability variables. Like, if in a baseball season, every team has a floor and a ceiling, they came way close to what their floor was than their ceiling this year. So with some positive regression, a bit of a return to the mean, plus a bit of more consistency from the offense, this team should absolutely be winning 87 to 95 games and getting a wild card spot. the division, it really depends on how good the Yankees and Orioles are end up being next year. But in order to kind of guarantee that, you've got to raise the floor. Right now, we have discovered that right now, the floor of this team is too low. So you've got to make some moves with some solid, dependable bats to raise the floor of the team. Can that happen? Yes. Will it happen? I don't know. It's the Rays don't tend to commit on long-term free agents, but could there be a one-year deal for someone somewhere? Could there be a trade for someone? Maybe. It's gonna be tricky to figure out. But my expectations for 2025, and I think this is echoed throughout a lot of the baseball world, and particularly among the Rays fandom, is super high. So don't count this team out yet, because while we had a step back and a reshuffle this year, this team's going to be really, really good in 2025. And we're going to do the RBLR awards show very, very soon. And we're going to be talking about some players that are going to be a big part of that and why this team is going to be so good over this course of this next offseason. We're all disappointed with how this 2024 season has gone. And I think the Rays made some mistakes. I think they had no plan for the catcher position, which is very un-Rays-like. They could never get... It never felt like Alex Jackson and Ben Roethlisberger were the options that the Rays would ideally want back there, but they felt like trapped in there because whatever Rene Pinto did to get him sent down to the minor leagues. I don't think they planned particularly well for their outfield depth, because Siri is a volatile player. Josh Lowe has been known to get hurt, and Randy is a streaky hitter. So their only kind of backup outfielders were Palacios, who was, again, pretty unproven at the time, and DeLuca, who was pretty unproven at the time, and they had to go through their own growing pains. And I just think there was kind of an assumption that the dependable players were going to be good again. Could that be helped? I don't know. But I just wonder if there was, in hindsight, definitely at the catcher position, more could have been done. But maybe more contingencies could have been put in place for if the power ran out. I don't know. Let me know what you think. Let us know on social media, and also let us know in the YouTube comments what you thought of this Rays season. Did they fail to have a good enough plan? Did they rest on their laurels too much? Or were they just purely unlucky? Or was it a mix of the two? Let me know. I'd be curious to have a discussion with you. I'm not right all of the time. I think baseball is subjective and open to interpretation a lot of the time. So do get involved in the discussion. We'd really love to hear from you. I'm going to kind of wrap it up for this Rays 2024 season. It may have been a disappointing one this time, but 2025, when we're here this time next year, I can't wait to talk about what we're going to be doing in the ALDS and beyond. And you guys can be along with us for the ride by dropping us a like, by dropping us a follow and a subscribe to get all the new episodes that they come up, and continue to help us grow this podcast to be the best Rays podcast it possibly can be. And it can't be that without you. So I just want to say thanks again for following along this season. It's been a tough one, but it's been worth it because of all of the people that I've got to speak to and get to know because of this podcast and being part of the Rays community. I think it's a really blessed place to be. And I can't wait to continue talking about it as we go into this cold, long and dark off season. But as always, Rays up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.